Well, hello everyone. I have been absolutely inundated in the past day or so because the Dark Lord himself, Tony Blair, has finally, and I mean finally because he's been quiet for a while, broken his silence and launched a scathing 5,700-word basically attack on Labour, on the leadership election, on the notion of Andy Burnham taking over, and anything else that you can care to name. This is the article. He wrote it on his own website, the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change. There it is, 26th of May. And as you'll see, this goes on and on and on. It's like a full essay. I'll read a little bit of it in a second. He's also done an interview on the BBC, which we'll also take a look at. This is a pretty wide-ranging essay. And, well, I mean, if you're a fan of this channel and Dark Lord Watch going over the years, it hits like a lot of classic tone talking points. But I have to say there's a few points where I thought, I always think with the Dark Lord that underneath it all, he is making some decent points for the good of the country, whether we like him or not. So we'll have a look at all of that in a second. Before we get going, you've got literally days left to pick up a course, promo code COOL. If you want a 25% off, that is. I'll play the ad, and when we come back, it's going to be a Dark Lord watch like never before, guys. Everybody wants to be cool, like this guy. This guy is cool. Do you know who else is cool? People who do courses at the academic agency. And you too can be cool by getting a course today with promo code COOL, which gets you 25% off all courses today. Promo code COOL. All right, so he says the Labour Party is playing with fire, or more accurately, with its future and that of the country. I led the Labour Party for 13 years through three general elections. It is largely a party of decent, well-meaning people who want the best for the country. Its mission is, as its 1994 rewritten constitution, rewritten by me, the Dark Lord Tone, says, to ensure that power, wealth and opportunity are in the hands of the many and not the few. And it's a perfectly noble one. But I'm afraid, and having read this already, he is not pulling any punches in this article. He really isn't. I'm afraid, like many progressive parties, it has an almost infinite capacity for self-delusion, says Tone. It won the 2024 election not by acclaim, but by being an acceptable, credit to Starmer, default option to a Conservative government the country felt had behaved unacceptably. However, partly because of the intellectual wasteland of the Corbyn years, it had no properly thought through analysis of how the world was changing and what that meant for policy. Wes Streeting is a huge political talent. Andy Burnham was an outstanding member of my government. But this leadership debate has an extraordinarily retro 20th century feel to it. Like most politicians, they're anxious to distance themselves from the Westminster bubble. But Britain's problem isn't with the Westminster bubble. It's with a politics bubble. The politics of the future may better be understood by those presently outside politics. In other words, me. In other words, stop worrying about stupid little careers and listen to me, the Dark Lord. I'm giving you a direct order here and you keep on disobeying. What's going on? The world is turning on its axis. Today's politicians are living in a 24/7 pressure cooker who have barely have time to recognize the turning, let alone study it. These changes need long-term strategic thinking, which is alien to the way most modern democracies function. I wonder why that is. Maybe Tone did read The Populist Delusion after all, because what he's talking about is planning time horizon, one of democracy's principal weaknesses. The government's principal problem isn't Keir's personality, right? He's basically calling that slop, or a failure to communicate our achievements, or a need to assert more strongly Labour's quote unquote values. I love it. I just love how scathing it is in this article. It is because we don't have a worked out, coherent plan for the country in a fast changing world and are in the wrong political position from which we devise one and win a second term. The government is governing essentially from traditional Labour soft left, soft left position tone, barely concealing his disdain, parked firmly in the party's comfort zone. Whether there is a Labour leadership change or not is irrelevant if it doesn't start with a policy debate. Are we really prioritising economic growth, essential not just for prosperity but for social justice, if there is a slew of policies we're implementing which won't restrict it? Does our economy right now need the goal of clean energy or cheap energy? How do we justify adding to the welfare bill when it's already ballooning? Taxes are high and getting higher, and we're told that we have to increase defence spending to prepare for the possibility of war? And is it right that we're living through the 21st century equivalent of the 19th century industrial revolution? And if so, are we remotely meeting the scale of that challenge? What are the opportunities in areas like health and education? So, surprise, surprise, Tone is banging on all of his usual soapboxes. Okay, put politics away, get behind the AI revolution, get behind, you know, digital tech, digital ID, all of the stuff I want. Okay, stop squabbling amongst yourselves, stop doing your left-wing nonsense, cut the welfare budget, okay, increase, do stuff that's friendly for business, and in particular friendly to my private public partnerships, etc. And he goes on and on and on in this article. Obviously I'm not going to have time to read 5700 words here. I did want to hone in on a couple of bits that I thought was just notable that he's kind of saying it out loud. He says, he again makes the argument essentially for the super hyper confident, what he calls radical center. I'll just read this little bit because it is one of the clearest, most direct expressions of the Dark Lord's will for his kind of technocratic kind of managerial state, if you want to put it this way. Let's just read this. He says, this is not the absence of better communication or of a, quote, charismatic leader has been the defining problem of the government. Too often they seem to totter in the breeze, to lack ballast. There are two epochal changes happening in the world today, one geopolitical, the other technological, and Britain is not prepared for either. They require radical change in policy, system of government and politics. The best political space from which this can be achieved is what I call the radical center. In other words, me. In other words, my Blairite state. Why aren't you using it? I gave you the machine. So why aren't you delivering what I requested? The center, properly defined, is where you put policy first and politics last. So you begin with a question. What is the right answer? In other words, all the answers I'm giving you. I've given you the right answer. You haven't got that excuse, right? You can tell he's angry. Only once you have that, you engage in the political task of persuading people of it. Britain is in a mess precisely because in recent years it has done the opposite. Both parties have gone off the rails by putting internal politics first and good policy second. Labour moving to the left after in 2007, culminating the absurdity of the Corbyn leadership, the Tories with Brexit. No, he puts the leftward lurch after, not after Brown, but after he left office. This is Blair saying, this country has been off the rails ever since I personally left number 10. The chutzpah of the guy is incredible, but okay, it's kind of intoxicating too. Neither has fully recovered, and ironically, their failures have spawned new parties to their further left and right. Yes, Britain needs a radical change, but the difficulty, not just in Britain, is often that sensible people aren't radical, and the radical people aren't sensible. He wants the sensible. He wants the country to be sensible and centered, but also be radical. Interesting. The first epochal change is in the geopolitical order, where America's superpower status is now shared by China, in time joined by India, a sort of G2-3. These countries will be far ahead of whichever nation is in fourth place. But this calculation, everyone else, including Britain, is a middle power. He's starting to echo the language of Mark Carney here, which is unsurprising. Carney gets a mention later on down. Second revolution is technology led by developments in AI, artificial intelligence, which will change everything. And I mean everything. There's no point in debating whether this technological revolution is a good or a bad thing. Just know it is a thing. In fact, it is the thing. It will displace jobs through creating new ones. But no one yet knows the full consequences. Companies and countries will rise or fall on the back of it. It will revolutionize the public sector and should in time revolutionize public services and government. Yet people in most countries, including Britain, have no idea what is about to hit them. I've only been singing it from the trees for the past 5 years. Why haven't you been listening to me? Okay. And then he goes on and on here. One of the things I want to touch on before we actually bring in the interview we did on the BBC is in this section, which is called, I mean, talk about a field day for the Kook Sphere in Switzerland. He's called it the New World Order. But what he's actually referring to is the rise of China, America's kind of new status in the world, but also America under Trump. What's really interesting here, he says he does not believe that we're witnessing a rupture with the Trump presidency. He says, I have great respect for Mark Carney, and as Canada's prime minister, I understand why it feels like that to him, that it's a rupture when Canada's very independence as a nation appeared to be put in play. Okay, but he's saying, actually, what's happening with Trump and America is not a rupture. It is just the dissolution of delusions and lies people told themselves. It's a reckoning with the truth, essentially. Okay? It's basically coming to terms with actual power and how it functions. So this is a very kind of cold-eyed, realist geopolitical take from Tone here. And he says, look, I've worked with Trump. I know what America is like. You know, we're out of Europe. You know, all of these things that existed when I was there seem to be falling apart. You know, it's been hard to be an ally of America. And he's kind of truthful about it. But the bottom line of this whole part of the article is power. Okay. And there's no point coping or virtue signaling or sticking your head in the sand, or you have to accept where Britain is in the world. And honestly, he's right. Honestly, Blair is basically correct in his cold-eyed geopolitical analysis in this part of the article. Okay, I'm not sure if he's right. His basic solution is more, you know, stay as a close ally of America and try to be as into Europe as possible. You could have a debate about that, but his fundamental view of the situation and the structure of it is basically correct. Blair is doing realism. Blair is doing a realist analysis in this part, which is interesting to say the least. And then he gets to the part on technology. And the thing I wanted to get to is his wish list down the bottom. He bangs on about, his hobby horse, which is the only way Labour can win is by pulling the strafe right. Right. There is no way for Labour to win by being left wing. So you have to be more like me, Tone, and strafe right, do it better than them, strafe right. And also just cut any progressive bullshit, delusions, woke, all the rest of it. Blair has been saying this for years. Okay, I agree with him on this. Again, like his geopolitics, Blair often has his eye on the fundamentals. He's often very clear-eyed about what's going on. It's just, you know, we may disagree with some of his solutions or all of his solutions. Okay. But he goes on and on and on here about the problems of the Labour Party, the stupidity of moving left at a time like this, you know, the need for competent, technocratic, managerial government. But I want to get to his list of things, of his agenda, right? What he wants to do from the radical centre. One, private sector will go through a process of adaptation to the new AI world. Okay, so he's foreseeing every single sector realigning to AI. Okay, planning reform and deregulation. The planning system in Britain is an abomination. Okay, so he wants reform in the area of planning. He wants cheap energy, okay, over net zero, right? Cheaper energy and electrification over net zero. Okay, this is essential. In other words, just fire Miliband yesterday, drop all that bullshit, okay, and get with the program. He says new, you know, private-public partnerships. I mean, this is classic tone, classic Blair stuff over and over. Reindustrializing the north of the country could be encouraged by giving incentives, but what will help it most of all will be first-class infrastructure, education, freedom from bureaucracy, right, all the stuff he's saying already. Plan for fundamental reform over time. I mean, basically, he wants to gut the entire public services and replace them all, like fire all the civil servants and bring in AI. The NHS needs not reform, but whole system healthcare reform. Okay, again, private-public partnerships. He wants to embed that. He basically wants to de-socialize the NHS and parcel off bits of it to the private sector. Again, you can agree or disagree, but he's been very consistent in wanting these things for a long time. Whatever it takes to solve the illegal immigration issue, that's the small boats problem, right? He's backing Mahmood by saying, like, you need to do whatever possible so that the illegal immigration crisis is gone. Most importantly of all, reorganizing the whole of government around AI, basically, in 21st century revolution. Digital ID, he pushes for that again. Lots of people will want to know. And then 10th, the reimagined state in which taxes and spending can be lower. Okay, so in many ways, his agenda is pretty radically, you might say, neoliberal and neo-neocon, right, as you'd imagine from Blair. But he also seems to be talking more sense than anyone else in Labour right now. And you know, if you're a Labour loyalist or if you're a Labour person, you may be thinking a lurch to the left is what's required, or putting hopes in Burnham and so on. Blair is right. Any left Labour party will be absolutely smashed in the next election because the things that need to be done in the country are what he laid out. That's the cold, hard reality. And leftists are deluding themselves to think otherwise. Let's now have a look at him on the BBC, where he basically gave an in-person interview version of this extraordinary article that we just had a look at. It's always, I mean, I don't know if we'll watch it all because it's 20 minutes long, but it's always nice to see the Dark Lord in action because of his Trivium fans, his skills in rhetoric, his skill, his ways, his means of persuasion. Seeing him in person is always worth a watch. So let's have a little look.
We're about to have the 7th Prime Minister in 10 years. A serious country can't do that to itself. And what is bizarre about the present situation is that we're all talking about politics when the key thing is to talk about policy. If you don't decide what your policy direction is, there's no point in changing the leader. And so the whole essence of the essay is to say it's...
Note, by the way, how good Blair is at summing up the top line. You know, he's written this 6,000-word article, sums up the top line straight away. So well rehearsed. His message discipline is spot on, unlike so many current Labour people.
Should be policy first, politics second.
So the Labour Party, you think, is asking itself the wrong question?
Yes, because, look... What I say is there are two major changes going on in the world today. One's geopolitical, leave that to one side. The other is this technology revolution, which I say is the 21st century equivalent of the Industrial Revolution. It's going to change absolutely everything. You've got to refashion policy and the way government works around it. And it's not even part of the debate. So you can have a different personality occupying number 10. But unless you have a policy agenda which makes sense of the way the world's changing, then you're not going to be any further forward as a country. And you'll find the country keeps shuffling the deck with prime ministers. OK, let's try this one. That didn't work. Let's try that one. And we'll carry on doing that unless we have a serious debate about how the country's changing.
Hold on a second. People might say, look, Labour was elected on a promise of change. It got a vast majority on the basis of that promise. And here you are arguing that when Labour ministers came to office, they should have ripped up their promise to protect workers with more rights, to increase the minimum wage, to turn our energy supply green and clean. Blair comes along and says, no, forget all that. Now you're in office, that's a daft idea.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. But here's the problem.
He's like, yeah, sod all that nonsense. Just do as I say.
If this AI revolution is what I say it is, and if we need higher levels of growth as a country, which we obviously do, then...
Note, by the way, conceding the point is a classic Blair disarming strategy, is a rhetorical strategy. It's like, yeah, it's a good point, right? It's a good point, Nick, but here's a better point. It's Blair rhetorical tool. And again, you can look at the current politicians and so few of them are able to just do that classic, just bit of, you know, charm, like 20 charisma, bit of disarming, just disarm the guy by conceding the point and then just like coming in over the top of it.
Even if you put these things in a manifesto, and let's be clear, I don't think Labour won the last election because people read the manifesto and said, this is what we want. I think people thought that Conservatives have behaved completely unacceptably. And to Keir Starmer's great...
He's correct. What he's talking about is zero seats or the whole idea of destroying the Tory party, the fact that so many people were so disgusted with the Tories. That is what won Labour the election. He is 100% right. Nobody... there are very few people who, you know, they basically won by default. They didn't win because they promised like green energy or something or for anything they said in that manifesto. He is completely correct in this analysis.
Great credit. The Labour Party was an acceptable alternative. Now, when it came in, it saw the state of the inheritance. I think at that point, of course, it would be difficult. Everything in politics is difficult. But if I'd been them, I'd say, look, all of these commitments, they may be very worthwhile. They may be proper commitments in easy times. But in these hard times, we've got to prioritise growth. We've got to prioritise support for the business.
Think of it. The point he's making is good. Think of it in medieval terms. I always think that it's easier to picture it if it's because medieval's like a small human scale. Okay, the new administration comes in. They get into the castle. They made all these promises to the people below, to the peasantry, okay? When we get in, there's going to be food for all. When we get in, there's going to be, you know, it's going to be wonderful, blah, blah, blah. They get into office and they're like, oh my goodness, there's not a single gold coin left. There's cobwebs in the coffers. You know, they kicked in all the furniture. You know, the previous administration have just left this place in absolute ruins. So they need to go back to the people and say, listen, I know we said all of that stuff, but you have to understand what a dire situation we've been left with here. And because of that, these things are going to have to happen before things get better. Problem solved.
Business sector. And this artificial intelligence revolution, we've got to grasp it, both its opportunities and its risks, with both hands. And so I think, yes, it would have been tough. But I think you could have explained to the country why it was necessary.
And there are more tough things that you propose in this essay. You talk about fundamental reform of welfare. Saying what to voters?
Saying that, for example, we're about to end up in a situation where just before the pandemic, it was only 5 or 6 years ago.
Look at the hand, by the way. Look at the hand. Remember your gestures of power. If you watch that old video of mine, one of the key... Blair gestures, one of the hands of power.
We had 2.8 million people, working age people on disability incapacity benefits. We're going to have, by the end of this decade, almost 5 million people. Right? You can't carry on. You can't carry on in a situation where you're going to end up, if you're not careful, spending more on incapacity and disability benefits than you are on defence. And then I know, again, all of these changes are really difficult, which is why I think whoever takes them on is going to have a really tough time. But it's like the triple lock on pensions. You look at the figures and you look at where Britain's going to be in 20, 30 years' time if it continues with this policy. It's not affordable. And at some point...
The blades are out. The blades.
We've got to be able to stand up and have an honest debate with the public, which is to say, look, ultimately, we're probably taxing people too much, spending too much, borrowing too much at the moment. If we carry on like this, with these large increases in incapacity benefit, with the triple lock on pensions, we're going to create a situation where economically we're not able to grow because we put such a weight affecting growth on the back of our economy.
And there's yet more of these difficult choices. You talk on health, of a fundamental realignment, getting rid of old shibboleths. Now, most people reading that will say, if not privatisation of the health service, much greater involvement of the private sector.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's saying. That's exactly what he's saying, Nick.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's basically, I mean, Blair's agenda here is, I noticed that he, you know, he spoke positively of Javier Milei in the article. I say positively. He kind of said, well, here's the reason Maloney and Milei and these sorts of characters are winning. And we have to remember that, broadly speaking, Cohen has picked the team here, right? Aligned with Trump, aligned with the Zios and so on. However, it is the case that the British state is too big. It is the case that these bureaucratic systems have become too unwieldy and do need to be scythed down. So, you know, as much as people don't like it, this is the bitter pill that is coming, right? And Cohen is just trying to say, like, look, one way or the other, it's going to happen. You might as well have Labour doing it than risk the Farage government, who will almost certainly do it.
Yeah, it is right, because let me tell you why. The whole of healthcare is under... This is part of this artificial intelligence revolution. It's going to revolutionise drug discovery. It allows you, if you use data properly inside the health service, to engage in a completely different way of organising your healthcare system. People are already... if they can afford to. For example, these weight loss drugs, right? We've got a program that makes them available to quite a small number of people on the NHS. Outside of the NHS, people who can afford to are already buying them. So this whole debate about are you privatising, in inverted commas, the NHS. But when I was in office, we improved the NHS and we doubled the spending on it. But it's a different world today, and you've got both the opportunity and the responsibility to do healthcare completely differently.
Well, we've got the agenda now. Let's turn a little bit to the leadership.
He has sounded pretty libertarian, to be honest, Blair. He has gone, like, I would say he's shifted to the right, even since he was the Prime Minister. He sounded like pretty hardcore libertarian on a lot of issues here.
And people might think, listening to this, well, we know who advocates all this. It's Kemi Badenoch. It's the leader of the Conservative Party. She says, let's get rid of net zero targets. She says, let's get rid of business taxes that are doing damage. She says pretty much everything you've just said. And indeed, Rishi Sunak was in that chair just minutes ago saying, yeah, I wholeheartedly endorse the lot.
Yeah, he does wholeheartedly endorse the lot, by the way, including the artificial intelligence revolution, including things like digital ID and so on, which we can come to if you want. But you see, I'm not asking the question about is it Tory, is it Reform, is it Greens, is it Labour? I'm just saying, OK, take a step back, analyse the world, where do we go? And I think part of the problem with the way we have this debate is that it always does start and usually end with politics.
You started to say...
he doesn't want politics. Blair wants a kind of soft, total managerial state. This is why in his book on leadership, which I refer to quite often, he, you know, he's full of praise for Chairman Xi and the Chinese. Blair doesn't want politics. And frankly, who can blame him? Who can blame him? How much time is wasted on Tory this, Labour that, Reform that? If this is what needs to be done, this is what needs to be done. Damn it. I can see his frustration. I want the managerial state to be more efficient as well. And to stop wasting all our money, to get more for the money that we put in. Why not? Everybody wants that.
Sentence there and you stopped. I don't really. I thought you were going to say, I don't really care.
Well, I was going to say, I don't really care whether it's left or right in a traditional sense.
You don't really care whether it's Labour anymore, do you? In that sense, as long as the policies are
right. I don't think Labour's got something. I'm not tribal in the sense that I think one political party is going to have the exclusive capability of deciding the right answer.
I have ascended politics and party. I have simply ascended to a new plane of seeing the overall picture and what needs to be done. I transcend left, right. I transcend party. I transcend all of this nonsense, slop. I see the whole picture and I know what wants to be changed, what needs to be changed. This is like final form Blair, more or less admitting on the BBC that he just doesn't give a shit about politics anymore. He just wants his will done or nothing, basically. And why does he want his will done? Because he has already foreseen and analysed the situation, and these are the things that must happen. Notice how the conversation is always foreclosed. There's no other options along the way, but this is classic tone that we've seen over the years of Dark Lord Watch. But this is almost like final form, final Pokemon evolution Blair that we're watching here. Total mask off, total just doesn't care anymore. He's going to give it to you straight, like a pear cider made from 100% pears.
And I guess, you know, the interesting thing when you go out of politics, and this is where I think the most interesting politics today comes from people outside of politics, because when you step out of politics and you start seeing how the world is changing, it's not really about traditional left and right politics. In fact, I think that gets in the way a lot of the time of just asking the question, OK, look at the world. How do we make sense of it? How do we keep Britain strong, its economy strong? How do we build its military and so on?
Now, central to that, I do want to come to the leadership arguments, because you do address the individuals who are involved. I'll come to that in a second. But central to your argument, it seems, and underpinning it all, is that technological revolution. And you say in your essay, let's end the hostility to technology. Let's embrace it and the change it can bring about. This programme every day, though, is filled by people scared of technology. They want government to protect their children. They want government to protect artists' copyright. Even the Pope has talked about AI being disarmed. It's not realistic, is it, for you to come along and say, look, guys, it's the way of the world. You say, it is what's happening.
No, but I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, it is the biggest single change you're going to have, right? It is the 21st century equivalent of the Industrial Revolution. Now, was the Industrial Revolution all good? No. You look at the conditions of the workers in the Industrial Revolution.
Blair's like, I write as things are, not as they ought to be. I am the modern Machiavelli here. I am modern Machiavelli. Really very fascinating character that he's turned out to be, in my opinion. Arguably one of the most interesting political thinkers in the current mainstream in Britain, which seems so odd, given that we live in the, you know, everybody says we live in the Blairite state and so on, but, you know, here we are.
Look at the displacement of people from the countryside. There were huge problems with the Industrial Revolution. There are going to be massive dangers. So I'm not saying, despite what people think, I'm not saying you embrace the opportunities, there aren't any risks. It's general purpose technology. There are huge opportunities. There are huge risks. I mean, this latest invention from the Anthropic company, Mythos, right? That is I mean, most people probably don't even know what that is. That is itself revolutionary. You're going to be able to have people sitting in their front room, potentially hacking into the infrastructure of the country. So I am not, and social media and its impact on young people, yes, of course. But look at the opportunities as well to do government and public services completely differently.
One of the most interesting things I think in this essay is your description of leadership. And you say you've studied Donald Trump. You make clear that you're not advocating the way he does things, but you describe him as a man who, when he sees a wall, drives through it at speed. People get injured, bits of the car fall off, but they're injured. You say he's got attitude, a tribe, a project. Is that the sort of leadership you think we need now?
Well, I think what I say is the challenge of democracy is efficacy. It's getting big things done. And therefore, you do need to understand, if you're ever going to defeat this populism, you need to understand its essential appeal. And I think its essential appeal is we're going to make the thing happen, right? Everyone else is arguing about, well, it's very difficult. I'm not sure we can do this or that. The populist appeal is I'm going to make it happen. And therefore, what I'm saying, discussing the radical centre, which is where I think the best politics come from, is that's got to be radical. It's, the centre's not going to be the place of managing the status quo. It's got to be the place of making big change, but it's based on policy first, politics second.
And
he wants centre. I mean, he's basically saying he wants centrist Caesar. I still think a very good option for this country, I know a lot of people will disagree with me, is if King Charles just dissolves Parliament and appoints Blair as an emergency Lord Protector. Honestly, I think he'd do the country good. I really do. It's happened before in history. It's not that off the wall. But anyway, we can only dream.
Many people hearing you say that say, well, we know what radical is. It's going back into the EU. Wes Streeting has just said it as one of the leading leadership candidates. And yet in this essay, you go, forget it. It's not going to happen.
I don't say it's not going to happen. What I say is you don't start there. And look, no one was more passionate against Brexit than me. And I think the results were both predictable and predicted. But if Britain's going to go back into a structured relationship with Europe, it's got to do so from strength. We're not strong at the moment. And it's going to be a negotiation. And in particular, if I'm right about the technology revolution, we've got to make sure Europe is not moving in a direction. And presently, by the way, it is, which is...
You see, as much as people hate Blair, wouldn't you want him on your side? Wouldn't you want him in that negotiation room? I feel like you'd want him there. I wouldn't leave him on the bench. I couldn't leave him on the bench personally. Just too good.
Hostile to that technology revolution. Now, I think Europe may well change its position around that, but it's got to be a negotiation. It's not a, just as it wasn't the answer to Britain's problems in 2016, reversing it isn't the answer to Britain's problems in 2026. I remain of the view that, of course, we should have a structured relationship with our own continent, but you can't just click your fingers and have it.
So realist. Kind of enjoying this, but it's going quite long, isn't it? Well, let's do another couple of minutes and see if we can get to the end. How long's left? 7 minutes. Let's try to do it, guys.
You have the joy, as you say, of now being, in inverted commas, outside politics. But Labour MPs don't. They have to make a choice. Keep the leader, get rid of the leader. Choose Andy Burnham, choose Wes Streeting, or someone else. What's your advice?
My advice is choose your direction first and make sure that before you have any leadership change, you make all the candidates set out in detail their policy, what the government's got right, what it's got wrong, what we should do differently.
And we've seen some of that, and you're pretty scathing about it, aren't you? You say that Burnham and Streeting are both getting it wrong in the promises they've made so far.
Well, I just think when you look at the analysis, for example, and by the way, I hope Andy wins Makerfield. I think he's a great guy. I want to see him in Parliament. But, you know, when he does this thing about 40 years of, wasted... I don't know what it is. We've been going the wrong
40
direction.
40 years of neoliberalism,
right.
He says.
Okay. So, I mean, we're 2026. Let's go back to 1986. Well, we assume he doesn't mean the first 7 years of Margaret Thatcher, right? So back to the 70s? I mean, Okay, and what, nothing good happened in that period of Thatcher with the business community or New Labour? I don't think he really means that, but what I'm saying, if you're going to change leader, you've really got to force people to say where they stand, because otherwise you'll be in what I think was always a problem for Keir. I'll be very honest about this, and I like him and I wish him well. But when we switched from that Corbyn agenda, there wasn't enough explanation, not as to why Corbyn was an election loser, that was pretty obvious, but why the whole agenda was wrong. You have to explain to people why it's wrong if you want to lead the party in the future in a coherent way.
You see, I think some people listening to this, particularly in the Labour Party, will say, yes, we do want leadership that has a mission and an agenda. It is protecting working people. And what Burnham calls neoliberalism has protected the rich. And they look at you and they say, look, Tony Blair, he flies around the world. He's with the tech bros. He's staying in smart hotels and on private jets. He understands the have-yachts and not the have-nots.
Yeah, I mean, you can, and that's the easiest thing for people to say, so that they don't have to deal with the argument. But by the way, when I was in office, we had a strong economy. We had improving public services. You know, we had improving results in education. We reduced poverty, both for pensioners and for children. You know, we were a progressive government. We weren't a neoliberal government. We doubled the spending on the health service, for heaven's sake, and introduced the minimum wage.
So people know that you spent some time during the Corbyn years thinking whether it's...
Very interesting answer there. Very interesting answer. And is it just me or is Blair de-aged? He looks like he's de-aged since we last saw him. He's been in that... Where's he been? Not just writing this essay, but in the Lazarus pit. De-aging.
Time to launch a brand new political party, a kind of movement like Emmanuel's Macron. This essay reads to me like a man who wishes he'd done it.
No, I don't wish I'd done it, but I think a lot of the issues that were raised at the time are still there and with us. And look, my whole belief about the Labour Party, it's had 120 years of history. It's been in power really for about a quarter of that time. And the reason for that is what I always call the birth defect of the Labour Party, when you separated the liberal progressive side from the Labour side. And New Labour was an attempt to fuse those two things back together. And that's why we won successive elections. The trouble is, since then, we've moved away from that. And you do have, I think, this unrepresented centre in British politics. And I think it's basically a supply problem and not a demand problem.
There are a couple of other things they say about you, and you know they'll be saying today, now that you have re-entered the political fray. Not just is he a friend of the rich, but his institute, which has, what, 1,000 staff around the world now, the Tony Blair Institute, gets an awful lot of money from a tech bro, from Larry Ellison. This is a man who is working on behalf of someone who has an interest.
Good questions from Robinson, to be fair. Good questions. Let's see what he says.
The reason we are very happy to work with people like Larry is because we share the same view about the importance of this technology revolution, doesn't mean...
We're happy to take the money because we agree with him. That's what he's saying. Fair enough.
Say we share the same politics on everything. And the Institute, we work in almost 50 countries around the world today. And therefore, we see what's happening in these countries and the importance of technology to their development. So, of course, you know, it's like when I argue against the net zero, people say, oh, well, but they do work in the Middle East, so it's all because of the, you know, the oil-producing countries. It's honestly to do with looking at the world and asking what the right answer is.
And the other thing I noticed the Guardian have picked up is that they say that you want the Labour Party of the country to get closer to Donald Trump, more like him. Now, you praised his Gaza plan as bold and intelligent. I think people listening who are generous to Donald Trump would say, the problem with that, it's all talk, isn't it? What happened to the border peace that we thought at one stage you might...
Good question, Nick. This is a good interview from Robinson. He's actually challenging the Dark Lord for once.
In Gaza, we've got all terrible
poverty. And I mean, the Guardian, I mean, you've got to love them. I always used to say when I was Prime Minister that the greatest source of election losing advice was always from the Guardian. I'm not saying the Labour Party should love Donald Trump, get close to Donald Trump. I'm simply saying the American relationship matters to Britain.
And on Gaza?
And on Gaza. Look, we put together a plan that ended the war. Now, at the moment, you've still got some fighting going on. You've still got a dire situation for the people. Actually, this next week, we will have further negotiations with Hamas because, you know, we need to move this new government into Gaza. So, and we need Hamas to agree that this government should be in control of Gaza. So it's a very tricky, difficult situation. But we have, if the plan is allowed to work, it will give Gazan people a fresh start with a new Palestinian government and a large amount of funding behind it.
Let's be clear, you're not on the border piece, let alone chairing it, but you've just said we.
No,
you're involved.
Now, there's a lot of misunderstanding about this. The board of peace itself is sitting leaders, right? Underneath that is an executive board, and I'm on that.
And therefore it is we.
Underneath or above?
When it comes to Gaza. Now, you're in another we, which is the Trade Union of Former Prime Ministers. We've had two of them on the programme today. I want to end by asking if you could advise whoever is the next Prime Minister after it's over. They're in office. There's an envelope in front of them. And you've got a line or two of advice you can give to the next Prime Minister of this country. What would it be?
Well, first of all, I'd start with an expression of sympathy and solidarity. But the advice I would give is get the best people in from wherever they are, who understand the world, who understand how it's changing, and who can give you a proper, worked-out, coherent strategy for putting the country back on its feet.
Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. Well, Dark Lord was in fine form, actually. I thought he was in like I said, it's almost like he's been in the Lazarus pit and he's rejuvenated. It's like he's lost 10 years. In the couple of months he's been away here. Extraordinary intervention. Let's see if I think Labour are basically incapable of listening to him. But if you notice, he sets up basically to work with whoever the next government is, because whatever happens, this plan, his future, is the one that he wants to happen. And frankly, I'm not actually against that much of it, to be honest. If I compare it to all the other alternatives on the board, you know, he's talking a lot of sense. Hate to say it. All right, guys. Till next time. If you liked this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.